Counsel, please proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Roger Jocko. I represent the plaintiff, Lowe, and the appellant, Celeste Greinberg. She had an interest in an oil well and was quite used to paying $0.05 a barrel for the disposal of salt water, which came out of the well. Typically, the salt water has to be removed from the oil and carted off. In this particular case, it was pumped to an adjacent abandoned well, and the company Matrix, who was the operator, pumped it into that adjacent abandoned well at 5 cents a barrel. So, and that's the way it remains today, so far as I know. But when Matrix took over the well by assignment, they raised the price from 5 cents a barrel to a dollar. And so when they did that, they did not pay any attention, we submit, to a provision of a operating agreement, which is quite common in the oil and gas industry. And that provision states that if they're charging their co-venturers or partners or whoever it is with expenses, then they can't charge more than 80% of the local average price. So that's to keep the operator from gouging their partners by charging a high price for services that could be obtained by someone in that same locality or from someone in that same locality cheaper. So when they raised the price from 5 cents to a dollar, then my client complained. The trial judge found that she had not proved a breach of contract, even though all of the evidence from Matrix was that they did not read the operating agreement, that they did not determine a local average price, and they just sat around in a room in Sugar Land, Texas, and said, let's charge a dollar, that seems reasonable to us, even though they were still paying the 5 cents to the neighbor for disposal. So we think that is a breach of their operating agreement.
Excuse me, Fender. There, what evidence did your client present that this did exceed 80% of the commercial rate?
None.
And so isn't this a burden of proof case, and doesn't the plaintiff normally bear the burden of proving a breach of contract?
Yes, normally. But when the expenses are involved, as Judge Terry knows from a recent case, which I also just found, I always look at the new cases when I come in for an argument. Normally, that burden is on the defendant to show the propriety of expenses. And that comes out of the Earth Info case by our Supreme Court. So you're right. That is the crux of the case. So the question for the court today is to decide whether we can bring in or we can rely on their evidence that they didn't do anything to comply with that provision, which says in mandatory language, it shall not exceed 80%. Whether we can rely on their disregarding that contractual provision to prove a breach, or whether we have to bring some burdens on us to bring proof that that $1 exceeds 80% of the local average rate. So that is the question that you will decide in this case. And we think that because the agreement is quite common in the industry, this would place a burden on all interest holders. Whenever prices go up or they're changed, if they have a complaint, the burden would be on them to come in and prove that the increase was not in compliance with the operating agreement. We think the operator, once the case is brought, once they admit they haven't paid any attention to the operating agreement.
But Mr. Jocko, suppose the people sitting around their office in Sugar Land, Texas, were correct in that raising, that is the original price of 5 cents per barrel was way below the average commercial rate, and the dollar per barrel was well within the commercial rate, or less than 80% of the commercial rate.
But there was no evidence of that in the record.
I understand that, but if, as Judge Miller stated to you, if it's a question of the burden of proof, then don't you have to come forward with some evidence to show that what Matrix did was not in compliance with the contract or the operating agreement?
True. I tried to answer that question by reference to the case. I'll just give you the number.
The case you didn't cite.
Right. It's just like, it's from last month. The briefing's been done for quite a while.
Supplement the record. Sides will.
It's my fault. I didn't find it until today. That's my fault.
Counsel, you'll have.
Okay, so the case, let me just find this number for you. I don't think it has a reported number yet. Watson and Cal 3. And your court's number is 06-CA-1542. And April 14th, 2011. So that's what it comes down to. You're absolutely right. Do we have to bring expert evidence to say that they breached the contract by charging too much, or do they have to bring evidence to say that they complied with the operating agreement? As the operator, we think they should, because, as I started to say, this will place a burden on all interest holders if they have a complaint to bring in expert evidence or whatever method of proof they can find to show that there's been a violation of a specific term, mandatory term, in an operating agreement. And I believe that's the issue that's before you. And I believe that the cases in general, although I don't find anything specific, or I would cite it, I promise you, in general, say that this is a burden that should be borne by the defendant, because the defendant has the best access to records. The defendant, after all, is the one bound by the contract. And last but not least, it's Matrix, the defendant here, who chose to make the increase in price, a 20-fold increase. So that's not so significant from a nickel to a dollar, but it could be significant in other cases. And here, it wasn't chump change, it's $50,000 and climbing since the trial some time ago that we say had been overcharged in this one well.
Dollar, just so I understand, is the dollar attributable, chargeable solely to your client, or is that chargeable to the entire working interest?
It's per barrel.
I understand that. But is that charge... Oh, I know there's
a link. Now that I can't.
Normally it would be to.
Yes, but.
A portion of that is a percentage.
Yes.
Okay.
But from what I read, I was not counsel at the trial. But from what I read, the trial judge found there were 42,000 barrels plus an issue. That at a dollar a barrel minus the nickel plus the interest worked out to just over $50,000 in excess charges claimed. And so those numbers are right. Now, to answer your question precisely, I don't know if I can, but those are the numbers involved. Yes, sir. And that trial court opinion order is annexed to the opening brief, so it's easy to find in there. One final point. After the trial was over, Matrix made a motion for post-trial relief, saying that they should be able to charge $4 and change per barrel for disposal of salt water, because that's what they charged on a well in Utah. The trial judge denied their request for relief, saying that there was absolutely no evidence of the local average rates. And that all she could order was, yes, they could charge up to 80% of that rate, whatever it was. And so no party brought evidence that you were questioning me about to the trial court, neither party. And it seems to me that the burden should be on the operator of a well, the person in possession of all the numbers and the data, to bring that forward. After all, they knew what was charged in Utah. They also knew what was charged somewhere else, if I can't remember, but there was a second place. You'll see it in the trial court's order. They also knew the price in another area where they operated wells. It's a small company that operates a lot of wells, Matrix. And so why they didn't know what the average local rate was in Rio Blanco or Garfield County, I can't tell you. But they didn't never brought any evidence of that, and we didn't either in the trial court.
And so I'm taking a look at the Watson versus Cal 3 case. I'm trying to figure out what portion of the opinion you're relying on. Can you please enlighten me?
On the it's just, it doesn't have a page. The case I have is shows it just above Roman 3. There are two paragraphs above Roman 3 in the case, and the one I'm relying on is in addition. Paragraph starts, in addition, it says, the third line down, while the burden of proving expenses to be deducted from gross profit generally will fall to the defendant, and citing Earth Info. And the Earth Info is a Supreme Court decision, and I have just parroted some of their arguments. They have the best control of the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's pretty obvious that an operator does have better control and better knowledge of what the numbers ought to be. And that they should not be able to come into court and say, I don't know what it is. I just sat around in Sugar Land and I thought that that would be a good price. And so we charged them. I don't think that's meeting their burden.
But Watson is one where the plaintiff was alleging it would get gross profits, and the defendant was alleging, no, you don't get gross profits, you have to deduct expenses because you shouldn't get that amount of damages against me. That's the context of deducting expenses in Watson. I'm not understanding how that helps you where you're trying to prove your damages at all. Watson is a deduction from damages, not you get those damages.
I take some comfort from the Earth Info case itself that you cited at page 120. Profit claims can be calculated first by identifying and deducting legitimate business expense from gross income. The defendant usually has the best access to this information, may properly be required to prove such expenses.
Right, but that's where you're trying to get lost profits out of a defendant.
Well, this is also a similar situation where they're trying to...
You're not suing for lost profits, are you, sir?
We're suing for overcharging.
Yes, that's not lost profits. That's damages based on lost profits. Then you get some... Mm-hmm. The defendant can try to make some deductions off that so that they have to pay a lesser amount of damages. That's not a shifting of the burden of proof.
But with respect, if you see a difference there, I do not. I see that the person in control of the numbers and the person bound by the agreement to not overcharge ought to have to prove that they didn't. That's what I submit. I have a minute left. I'll reserve it.
Thank you, sir. Counsel, if you need the citation to either of those cases, I'm sure counsel will give those to you after argument.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Karen Jensen. I'm a partner at the law firm of Baker and Hostetler. I am counsel to Matrix Production Company, the appellee in this case. My bar number is 3881. It seems to me I have a bit of a moving target here. The issue presented for appeal today appears to be different than what was argued in the appellant's opening brief. It appears to me is that Greinberg, the appellant, is arguing that the trial court improperly put the burden on the appellant to prove its breach of contract case at trial. I submit to you that that reverses hundreds of years of contract law, and the trial court did not err in that regard. I also submit to you that the appellant was free to present whatever evidence it chose to during the course of this, the 4 years of this litigation at our trial that lasted 2 days. The appellant was free to put on any witness that it chose. It was free to frame its pleadings as it chose, and it did what it did, and that was argue, and this is one point that has been confusing here today. It argued, Mrs. Greinberg argued a breach of an easement, and that was the basis of her complaint. The easement charged 5 cents to the owner of the land where the saltwater disposal sits. Matrix filed a declaratory judgment action that stated that no, the easement isn't the controlling contract here. It's the operating agreement that governs the parties. And that operating agreement is the agreement that contains that provision about the commercially reasonable rate in the area. As a second part of that declaratory judgment action, Matrix sought a determination that $4.60 was the prevailing rate in the area. The trial court denied the appellant's breach of contract claim on the easement. It granted the breach of contract claim the declaratory judgment claim as to what provision of the operating agreement controlled that commercially reasonable rate. That's what governed the interest here, and denied the $4.60. So there was no evidence in the record as to what was the proper rate. There was no testimony on whether a dollar was commercially reasonable or not. That was plaintiff's burden to put forth evidence if it was challenging what we actually were charging, but it did not do that. And I also submit to you that they have had that Mrs. Greinberg has had a number of opportunities to make this case, in that she filed 2 cases relating to this issue in Rio Blanco County. She filed 1 case in Denver District Court relating to this issue, and that case was dismissed in spring of 2010 on the basis of res judicata by Judge Hoffman. And now we're here arguing similar issues again. She had her opportunity to make this case. She has not done it. This appeal should be, the court's judgment should be affirmed. I want to address briefly the issue presented for appeal as framed in the opening brief, and that was that this is a good faith case. Make no mistake, this is not a good faith case. There was no allegations of good faith, a violation of good faith and fair dealing in the complaint. There was never ever any evidence taken at trial on good faith, and I would contend that the evidence on a good faith issue would be different than evidence on a breach of contract case. So therefore, because there was no evidence on good faith was not presented to the trial court, there is no appealable issue there. The appellate court has no decision to review because there was no determination on good faith made by the trial court. Unless you have other questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For 1 minute.
It's true, and so I guess Ms. Jensen is saying that I'm making a bad faith argument that there was no good faith, but that's, I want to stick to my reply brief. You don't have to get there to make the decision that we think you should. In other words, you can ignore that, the bad faith argument. I don't want to necessarily waive it, but I don't think you need to go there. Good faith is implied in every contract. And in my respectful submission, anybody who gets sued for breach of contract, it's just another ground for a contractual breach. And if you look at the record here, you can see plenty of evidence that they didn't really look into this at all. They just picked a number out of the air and went with it. So, unless you have any more questions, that concludes my submission.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you
both, counsel. Matter submitted, and.
coming in due course.